WDRBY, Roland Derby Radio, is proud to present Q-Tips with Electrocution, legendary player for the Carolina Roller Girls. Send your questions in right now to electrocution at carolinarollergirls.com. That's ELEKTRAQTION at carolinarollergirls.com. And now, get ready for Electrocution, only on WDRBY, Roller Derby Radio.
Well, good evening. It's another Wednesday, and you're on with Q's Tips. My name is Electrocution of the Carolina Roller Girls, and you can reach me at electrocution at carolinarollergirls.com, or you can find me on Facebook under Renee Q McHugh, because Facebook stole my name. Still haven't given it back. It's now been almost 6 months. Anyway, I'm annoyed because it's really hard to find derby people now because you can't find their derby names, and that's how I know most people, so it really bums me out. Anyway, but here are two of my favorite derby people. And he's making a face. I'm trying to butter him up because they're refs. Anyway, so would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Polly Dangerous.
I'm Pika.
And where are you guys from?
Well, we're both with Carolina now, but I'm originally from Fox City Foxes, now Fox City's Roller Derby in Northeast Wisconsin.
Nice. Nice. That explains the accent a little bit. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not that bad. No, I'm not Fargo.
And where did you come from?
I started originally with the Paper Valley Roller Girls and moved down a couple different places, a couple different leagues, and now with Carolina.
Yay! And we're so happy to have you. We love it when refs come in, and we love referees in general. So, and Pika, we love it when you come to practice because it helps us out so much. So thank you very much. What have you guys noticed about moving down here? Because some people aren't from... We're in North Carolina, in case you didn't know. What have you noticed from the change? Because you're from the Great White North up there.
Where's the snow?
It's coming.
There's no snow here.
That's why I came here, was to get away from the snow.
I agree with you. I agree completely. That's the only reason I exist here, is because I don't like winter weather, and I've been moving south ever since I was an adult.
slowly came down more and more south.
So pretty soon I'll then end up in South America somewhere. I'm figuring. All right, so we have a lot of questions tonight. I know that, you know, some of them are ref-based questions, so I'm going to let y'all handle them. Some of them are skater-based questions, and some are both, you know, talking about, you know, attitudes, retirement, you know, things like that. So let's start off first. This was a general question that was posted on one of the forums, and I thought it was really interesting. Do you guys think it's okay to not wear full gear if you're skating at a skating rink and representing roller derby?
That's a very good question. As a ref, safety first, and if you're in an event, I'm going to be chewing you out if you're not wearing your wrist guards or have your helmet buckled. I don't care if you... I've told a Team USA men's skater, one of the best skaters in the world, put your wrist guards on when you're skating around.
Right.
But at a roller rink, I think it's good to represent the sport wearing your gear, mm-hmm. but... It's a roller rink. You're surrounded by everyone else. I like wearing my gear just because children are there and I don't want to bang up my knees.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I pretty much exclusively only wear my knee pads, but that's just because I've gotten taken out
speed bumps.
Yes, exactly. We'll call the small children speed bumps. I like that. And yeah, so that's usually my limit.
I wear my knee pads and my wrist guards, yep. and my elbow pads. I don't wear my helmet if I'm at the skating rink. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in the 70s. Nobody wore any of that protective stuff. You know, you just went and skated. I also never wore a helmet when I was on my bike.
Yep.
You know, I still ride my bike without a helmet.
Yep.
I'm not doing anything crazy now. Back in the 70s, and my mom and dad can attest, they're probably listening, I used to take my horrible 10-speed and go down this really steep hill, no hands.
You know? Oh, good.
And I probably should have had a helmet on. But I do think when you're at a skating rink, you're not doing contact
right.
on purpose. You might trip over something.
Speed bumps.
You're not being reckless with right. your safety.
Trying to be controlled
right.
and skating in a hopefully safe fashion.
I'd hope so, because you wouldn't want to be a jerk if you were, especially if you're representing a roller derby or your league.
Even a league.
Yeah.
Right.
But I feel it's good advertisement. Like, why is this person wearing skates or wearing all this gear? They're a good skater. It's not for their safety. And then maybe mm-hmm. can start a conversation. I don't know. I'm not advertising at derby. I'm not very good at that.
It's hard. I don't like to talk to people. Yeah. So, you know.
I was going to say, though, when I was a newbie skater, I absolutely would not hit the roller rink unless I had all of my full gear and, helmet included.
Now, when I go trail skating, I wear my helmet.
Oh, yes.
And I wear my mouth guard.
Absolutely.
Because I never know what I'm going to run into.
It's also death outside trail skating.
Yeah. Also, there are deer and they're mean.
Oh, my God.
So I have been chased. So I will wear all my gear. But
skate faster.
And I'll wear all my gear, clearly, at a skate park because, you know, there's safety reasons. And I always wear my gear. Like, our league is one of the leagues, and I don't know if all leagues do this because, according to the board, the group talk that we were on, not all leagues do this, that they don't make you wear your helmet for parades. You can skate. No. And I think that's a really terrible idea.
I completely agree.
I know a number of skaters in my old league that got injured. And usually what happens, at least for my old league, it seemed like the injuries happened doing silly stuff, parades, doing a turnaround stop, doing
this. Right, showing off.
Giving somebody a hug.
Yeah. Locking your knees up, and that's when you fall over. I mean, you're tired because you're standing there for, you know, because parades don't just happen.
Yeah, they don't just move.
You have to get there, stand there, you know. Yeah, and the streets kind of suck all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you run over a piece of candy and you're toast.
Yep, I was going to say, we in Milwaukee did parades a couple times, and they have cobblestone.
Oh, yeah.
Parts of the street and the intersection, so you have to, you know, literally walk on your toe steps the entire way across the intersection.
Yep, we've done it.
Yep.
All right, next question. This is this is from Cassie Kahn. Very basic, but how in the world does a ref watch for so many different things all at once? And I think this is a great question because I have stepped in to help ref at, like, you know, invitational mashups or whatever you want to call them. Oh, yes. And it's hard, you know, to like not get the stares. Or the yips, because you're like staring at someone and you're oh shoot, I missed that. I missed this. I didn't look at their feet. I didn't look at her hips. You know, what do you do to stay that aware?
Take a step backwards so that you don't have to be moving your head when you're looking. Because if you're pulled back a little bit, you can actually see all of the action. And that's kind of a basic ref 101 tip, but.
I'm going to throw some jargon. There's
words like jargon. I love
triage
jargon.
And narrow focus and wide focus. And you got to remember that there's 7 people out there. Mm-hmm. And you just, if you know your position and you trust your crew, then it really helps you to figure out what you need to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So as a jammer, if you're narrow focus, you focus on your jammer. As a pack ref, using wide focus, and your eyes are going where the action is. So if there's somebody standing there, you're not going to watch them. But I think a good example is like a star pass. You got to, somebody's got to be watching the feet. Somebody's got to be watching the star. They got to make sure everything's legal. Everything's going on. And knowing who's watching what, that's how you watch everything. There's no one person can do everything.
So when there is a star pass happening, you kind of know it might happen. You know, like, is there like a, okay, this is probably right for a star pass, so get on your jobs? Is that, you know?
Usually the, oh, there's going to be a star pass happening is generally when they pull the star from their helmet. I can generally say that there hasn't been a whole lot of, you know, ripping the star off the helmet and immediately the star pass happens. There's usually a little bit of time in between, enough for the jam ref to be like, oh, good, missing, you know, star from the helmet, must be in the hand, following the star. But it's really a process.
Well, no, it's a good thing, because I know that when I've done the very little reffing I've done, which has been junior baby reffing, I'd say, there's a lot of communication between the refs that I didn't hear earlier back in 2009.
Right.
So in 2009, I never really heard the ref crew talking. And now I hear them more.
Yeah.
You know, I hear things like, you know, lead is closed, pack, you know, pack is here, you know, you know, they do a lot of different
in, out, you know, about to call out a play.
Right. And I think you guys are doing a lot more communication. And what is that just, is it going to amp up more, do you think?
I think so. There's always more, I always like more information. And the more refs I work with, I pick up these little things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I've developed my own things that I like. And just, if you have, as a pack ref especially, I'm always chatty. I'm always talking to people. If the jam ref's coming up, I'm going to tell them where the other jammer is. And anything that we can do helps. The skaters, they love that star stash. And as soon as that star goes away, somebody's going to lose eye contact with it. And I've done it a couple times where it's like pointed out the pivot has a star, and the jam ref is watching the old jammer. It's go chase down your right one. And so it's anything like that. I picked it up. One of my favorite first things I picked up was talking about where the other jammer was, especially if they're coming from the box for mm-hmm. box points and anything like that, like I said, just helps out, you know, pack his front, pack his back.
Yeah.
Just yep. little things.
Like I said, that was never when I started, and I mean, I'm a listener. That's how I get a lot of my information on the yeah. track, is I listen for things, and I would never hear it. The refs would say anything, you know, like unless they were calling a penalty on right. me, of course, right? But, you know, I wouldn't hear it otherwise, or I'd hear the four whistles, but I never heard the chatter, and I think there's more chatter now.
I think the officials are getting much better about developing. I've talked about this with other officials, but I think the key thing that made communication better is there's more tournaments. Officials are traveling more. It's not just the top officials are traveling to the WIFTA tournaments, but
right.
I was trying to list all the leagues that are hosting a tournament this year. So there's just so much a melting pot. So I remember going to my first tournament and like, oh, we're going to do things this way because that's how the Chicago crew does it.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's there. I don't really think there's a Chicago way or there's a West Coast way or a Southeast way other than inside whiteboard, but that's a different conversation.
And that is a conversation that everyone should probably have with their,
a whole other conversation.
But yeah, things are getting much more, and the clinics that are happening helps too. So it's just absolutely. Everyone's working with each other. There's a ref I talked to at State Wars, and it's like, I'm never going to reach the upper echelon because everyone's getting better and the bar keeps raising. It's, yes, that's true, but everyone's getting better faster. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at refs that are 6 months to a year in, and they're better refs than I was 2 or 3 years in.
Okay, that's a really good question. So you both have been reffing for how long?
Years.
Couple years at least?
Five, six, yeah.
I mean, 5 years, 6 years over here, and how long for you, seriously? I mean, you said
three?
Yeah. So... what? That's what I want to talk to you about. Like, how long does it take to grow and nurture a ref? I think it's like, you know,
very much depends who you're asking, where they're starting with, you know, who they're learning from.
Mm-hmm.
There was an official that I spoke to, and I think it was a clinic, and he said that from starting training to, you know, on the street as a ref is roughly about a year.
Okay.
And I kind of agree with that as being a basic standard, you know, kind of a general idea, because, you know, that's generally how long it takes to learn how to skate, become proficient at skating, you know, then move into learning the rules, memorizing the penalties, memorizing the verbal cues and everything. So, I mean, that's a very broad measurement, but I think it's fairly accurate.
What can leagues do as for practice time to give you guys something that makes you feel like it's helping you as well as you develop? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Endurance.
It's getting committed refs there already, or whether you have them there currently or if you can invite refs on a regular basis. It's really tough. There's a lot of drills, and there are ref drills out there. There's a sock drill, if you've heard of it, where all the skaters drop the socks and you determine the pack and things like that.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, from my best experience, it's you learn by doing. Mm-hmm. We can learn the rules and we can watch you guys do drills and we can do different drills, but the best development I get is by scrimmaging and having somebody there, like watching over my shoulder, or I'm watching over somebody's shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So having the core group, my old league, they don't really have leadership for refs, and I'm trying to give them tips and whatever else I could at the time, but it's just practicing with other people, getting them, encouraging them to go travel. If your league is willing to travel 2 or 3 hours to another league to scrimmage, bring the refs along, because mm-hmm. you know they're going to be able to learn from the other refs.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So,
and I think that's, you know, that's the same with skaters. You know, you want to give them that experience to other skaters. You know, for a long time, our league was very closed off, you know, from other leagues. That we were like, we're so good, blah, blah, blah. And I was always like, as a freshie, I was like, I'm not learning enough because
right.
I'm not good enough to take you guys on. And the middle echelon wasn't really there for me to...
when you hit that, that's
right, and it really sucked. So I went off and practiced with as many leagues as I possibly could in the area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped me a lot. And so I think that probably would help reffing.
Absolutely.
Do you guys watch a lot of footage? Just curious about that.
Not as much as I can. I'm terrible when it comes to watching sports, where if I know what happens,
you
don't
want
to watch the game.
Yeah.
But I do try to go back, and when I do go back to watch footage, it's mostly to watch... the refs on a crew, so I can give feedback or do evals.
Mm-hmm.
But
I would think that you'd watch the ref, like.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you would sit there and be like, okay, I'm gonna watch the pack ref on the, or the, you know, inside pack ref, blah 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 blah, mm-hmm. the whole time.
Yeah.
And is that, can you do that? Because Uncle Paul can do that with skaters. Like, he can watch one skater an entire game. Like, just every game, like, he can pinpoint that skater out, and I'm always like, I can't. You know, I mean, I just get, I'm like, ooh, that was, okay, I wasn't supposed to watch that, she's over there, you know?
It's, but kind of like what you were saying for skaters, I'd say the same thing for refs, like, okay, I'm watching this one inside packer for this one OPR, and mm-hmm. for three jams in a row, there's not a whole lot going on for
right.
them to see.
Right.
So I do a lot of fluid, I'll watch different refs for different jams, going back to watching footage, I'm terrible watching footage because mm-hmm. I'm over analytical and it's like, I don't want to watch this game because I know I messed up that one call.
Oh, I know.
And I don't want to see that again.
That's, I can't watch
almost,
footage.
You know what, my Beth Rowe, who used to skate with us, is the same way. She could not watch herself. She could watch everybody else, but she, when it came to watching herself, she had to watch it first by herself so she could get over like all the screw-ups. And yeah. I'd be like, you had very few screw-ups. Stop. I mean, yeah. as a derby player, I assume I'm going to have a ton of screw-ups.
All of the screw-ups.
Because, you know, it's the game, but mm-hmm. I could see someone that's a little bit more, you know, it took me a long time to get over that perfectionism,
right?
But you know, you're refs and it has a little bit more of a weight to your screw up.
Exactly.
So if you have a screw up, I'm not saying you do, but that's what you were saying.
We do.
Everybody does. You're humans.
Yes.
But I mean, I could see that being really hard, like, to watch. You're just like, oh,
refs are their own worst critics.
I'm sure they are.
So much so.
There's a Curtis Ely is a retired ref, and he wrote an article for one of the blogs years ago, and I always think about it. Like, he's describing about the people are watching up, or he's getting judged from up above, and he's,
oh, I did read that one.
Yeah, and yes. it's really the Peterson being judged up above. That's his head, and you know, he's stuck in his head saying this and that. And
yep.
It's a challenge. You got to get past that,
and it's hard because you're there. You're like, I'm doing the best I can
yeah.
with what I got. Mm-hmm. You know. All right, next question. Matt Cook, he's one of our super fans, local super fans. And he says, is there a good list of equipment manufacturers that you guys, where do you guys get your gear? I guess that's a good question. Anywhere you can get gear, or what do you do?
I know enough people who run derby businesses mm-hmm. that usually it's the most recent person that I've spoken to.
and it works.
Yeah, I buy most of my gear at tournaments, and if I
was gonna say tournaments,
if I recognize a shop, I'm probably going to go to that shop first.
Mm-hmm.
But depends on what I'm getting. I like to say I'm an early adopter of Crazy Skates, so I tried buying local. I tried buying local, but they were available for me, it was only through one dealer, so I had to go through.
You can give them a shout out.
Yeah, Sin City Skates.
There you go.
May
I love Sin City Skates. I mean, yeah. they're the ones that told me what to wear and everything. Yeah. And I always say this, you know, when I was a fresh meat skater, I was like, I have really skinny feet and I want to get these skates, and they're like, those skates aren't for you. And I was like,
don't tell me no.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's why I skate in 595s. They're hideous, but they fit me perfectly, and they
nice.
Were absolutely right, and I've never, you know, doubted them since.
Mm-hmm.
It really was funny because she yelled at me on the phone and I was like, I'm sorry.
Do not.
Yeah.
Do
so,
not buy this.
I mean, I always tell people if they're having problems sizing or trying to figure out what they want, to talk to the girls at Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if you can, go someplace that's local to try stuff
to try
on.
Try something on. Right?
Tournaments.
Sizing.
They're getting much better at tournaments.
Great.
You're fine.
Yeah.
They're bringing
so
much gear. Like, for a while, I don't think they had so much variety. But now, there's so many types of boots out there, and it's great. I think it's great.
I was going to say, there's a lot of choices, but...
Yeah, I think tournaments are where I always get... I always, like, hit up the Rydell guy, because for a while I had the revenge plates,
yeah.
and I would go through pivot cuffs, and I'd be like, I need some pivot cuffs.
Hit me
and
up,
he'd be
man.
Like, here. He'd see me coming, and I'd be like, hey.
Sup.
Yeah, sup. All right, next question. This is from Helen Swanson. Does a skater have to stand upright when there are 10 seconds left to serve in the penalty box, or can they stand in derby stance? Now, I did ask for clarification on this one, and she was talking about hovering.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to give you three answers.
There we go.
The first one is the ref answer, which is stand means stand.
Okay.
My answer is, at a quick glance, we need to be able to tell that you are not occupying that seat, whether as a ref or as a skater, because mm-hmm. the opposing team, they're going to plan, especially if you're a jammer, what you're doing.
Yep.
But the best answer is listen to the box staff. Most box staff is very communicative. They'll tell you, please stand. Some box stand or box crews will let you crouch or be ready to sprint, but you have to be moved away from the chair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So listen to your box staff. If you're not doing what they want you to, they'll tell you what they need to do.
Especially at higher level.
Right.
NSOing. Oh man.
I think the hovering thing started in about 2010. Yeah. And everybody thought they were super clever because they're going to hover. But you're right. It interferes with the game because the NSOs need to know if that box is clear.
Yes.
And the refs need to know. Yeah. And the other team needs to know. And your own team.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you could be shooting yourself in the skate if you're, you know, communicating something improperly to your bench by hovering over your seat instead of standing upright. So.
Well, and another thing is I like to move into the box wherever it's going to be the best place for me to get out of the box. So, and that's usually not sitting on the chair or close to the chair.
Remotely hovering.
So, yeah, don't hover.
Yeah.
Don't pretend you're peeing.
Don't be a jerk to your NSOs.
Yeah, just you know, there are better ways to win a game, and by trickery and hovering is not one of the ones.
Agreed.
So,
we'll go with don't hover.
Don't hover.
Nobody likes it.
All right, Catherine Wall is one of our skaters. She's new. She said, "What rules do you see new skaters breaking most often?"
All of them.
All of them. As a ref, what suggestions would you have for fresh meat learning the rules of derby?
Love your refs, be nice to your refs, ask your refs all your questions. That's a very good start.
It depends. As far as if the first one is which rules are they breaking a lot, it's probably cutting, to be honest. I think back in minors, you know, I would say elbows a lot, but now that the impact's changed, the cutting, they're just not they're unaware of what's happening on the track. They get knocked out. They don't realize people moved, or they don't realize they're knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big one. But like Pika said, just listen to people. I've did a mixer with very green skaters, and they had no idea what to do. So it helps for the team around them to prep them.
Mm-hmm. And I think we try, but we forget some of the things that they don't understand. Like, well, when we had the new skaters in, we had the new skater scrimmage. The first thing we did last year was, oh yeah, this is the penalty box.
Yeah.
This is how you go to the penalty box. This is how you leave the penalty box. Because we don't normally do that during a drill.
And that's what the problem is. Some leagues are, okay, if you get a penalty, what you're going to do is you're going to leave the track and come around and enter the track behind. Or you're going to do 10 sit-ups.
Yes.
You're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they forget to tell them, okay, that was great for practice, but now this is going to be a real game.
Yep.
This is how you do it.
Yep.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's a couple leagues that I've skated with where they actually will let me run new skater drills where it's literally I'm sending them off on a penalty and they have to go sit in the box properly and we'll, you know, change the scenarios. So it makes it a weird scenario. Or, you know, we run the false start drill.
Where if I call you on a false start. That's one that I don't even think about. But even some of our bootlegger players will forget.
Yep.
And exactly. I'm like, oh, crap.
We have to write that down. I can't tell you how bad I feel. Like, as an official where I, you know, call a false start.
And they go to the box.
And the skater looks up like, what do I do?
Or they go to the box immediately. And you're like, no, you didn't hear a whistle. Get back here.
So, that's another one. Illegal procedures because of not knowing exactly how to do something correctly is a big one for new skaters. But, I mean, always, always ask your questions. You know, no ref is ever going to tell you, I'm not going to answer your question.
No, we used to have ref story time at the end of our scrimmages night. I totally love that. So I hope we bring it back this year where we would take, like, the last 10 minutes and everybody sits around after the scrimmage and be like, okay, well, something weird happened and we don't know what would normally happen then, you know.
I love that plan.
Yeah, those were fun. Those were fun. So, and the big one that always came up was the star pass. Yeah. Like, all the, all the screwball ways that the star pass could get messed up, you know, and be like, what if I'm here? What if you're here? And, you know.
How about just don't.
What if I slingshot this thing to you? You know, I mean.
Oh, my God. I've never seen that.
For the record, I'm going on record here. I like the star pass rules now more than they were before.
Oh, yeah. Yes. They were a little crazy before.
Oh, God.
All right.
So confusing.
And so, as a ref, what would you suggest for fresh meat to learn the rules of derby, other than asking?
Definitely read them.
Okay.
They
are a little hard if you don't understand.
Oh, yes. No, I absolutely understand. Mm-hmm. The app is fantastic.
Okay.
So I'm going to go off that. Maybe not the first practice you have to sit down and read the rules, but maybe when you're getting ready for your first game or maybe after a couple of games, at some point, read through the rules. And if you do that, you're going to be a leg up on a lot of the other players. I'm sorry. There are leagues out there where I have to explain the rules during a timeout or an official review or between. It's like, so they'll do an official review, about something, I go back to my crew and we discuss it, like, okay, so you're right, what you saw is correct, but this is the rule. And it's not something obscure thing where if this happens and, you know, if Mars in retrograde or whatever you want to say. No, it's some stuff that I think skaters forget about. Like, I think I had this happen a couple of times. The jammer is never out of play.
Right.
So I've called out of play blocks on a jammer, but they forget that the blockers are out of play.
Yeah.
And that's where the penalty comes in. So knowing some of these nuances help a lot.
We do not let people play until they pass the rules test. They can't play.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they understand them.
Right.
You know, people can take some people are very good at taking tests.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, and some people
great at memorizing answers.
Yeah, so, and that's something that I feel like this is something that helps out newbie skaters, is making them NSO.
Yeah.
Because they'll hear stuff. And if they're standing in the middle with the refs and they're like just even writing down the penalties for a scrimmage, they'll hear it and they'll be like, hey, now I have the question. You know, like now they can see it in play.
Mm-hmm.
And watching footage also helps, I think.
Absolutely.
I think you become an asset. The more you understand the rules, the more asset you can become to your team. So
Asset.
But it's just getting clarity, and you're talking, you know, there's so much to take on for a new skater, like their strategy. Well, you can leave that to captains and coaches, and if you understand your rules and how to interact with your team, I think that'll help out. Understand why you're going to the penalty box so that it doesn't happen again.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough because I tell new refs to read the rules too, and it can be so overwhelming. But at some point, make it a to-do list. Get through the penalty section over a long weekend or something.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, even if you just, like, break it down and read, you know, like, a page of rules and, you know, come to practice and want to talk about it with one of the refs. Like, that's absolutely a fantastic idea.
I think, like I said, you know, when the divisions are on and when champs are on and you see something weird and you come into practice and you're like, hey, did you see that? Because that was some crazy shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you all talk about it. And I think it becomes a shared thing.
Right.
And that's why I love the WFTDA footage, because it's clear, it's shared, everyone can get it.
Yep.
You know, it's, you know, archived. If you didn't get it the first time, you can be like, oh, is that the good game to watch? I'll watch it when it comes out.
Right.
So I think those are good examples.
Agreed.
All right, Bridget Settlemyer asks, so many, what is the most important thing to know going into reffing?
You are going to fuck up. It's going to happen.
It's not as easy as you think it is, I think.
Oh, I never thought it was easy.
No. It's not you. I have had skaters tell me, oh, well, I can't skate anymore, so I'll just ref.
I think there's another question where I want to talk more about that.
Oh, yeah, it's going to roll some more. So but, you think it's you're going to fuck up is a pretty good...
Yeah, I mean, everyone makes mistakes, and it's good to know... Well, you're going to mess up, but what I was saying was, it's more to it than what you think. It's okay, so I'm going to go out there. I think it's different now, but when I started, it's like, okay, I'm going to put on some skates and there's going to be some cute girls hanging out, whatever. It's that's not what it is at all anymore, but you got to learn to skate.
We're
you
got
to get your endurance up.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But you're not using the fishnets to sell anymore. No. Especially if you're coming from a skater going to it, it's not just something you can just pick up overnight. So it's going to take dedication. But I do also like leagues that have home teams.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I shouldn't say that broadly because I was talking, there's some home team games are more competitive than some
regulation
games.
Oh, no, they're horribly. I got to tell you, our home team games are freaking cutthroat. So they are really cutthroat. And I do understand what you're saying, though. But there's a sort of a... You know, if you guys, let's say a call was curious or we don't appreciate that call, it's okay. It's a home team game.
Yeah.
We'll live.
But I want to say that, you know, not everyone's dedicated and not to everything. No one wants to be the tournament head referee for WFTA Championship. Some people just want to get out and skate and hang out with their friends, and they think they can do that by reffing roller derby, and they want to do it, you know, three times a year or six times a year, whatever your home team schedule is. You know, that's great for the league, and I think that's something important. Just make sure you have the time and motivation to dedicate what you want to do.
Well, and that's the same thing I always say to skaters, because not everybody wants to be on a WFTDA charter team, and they don't want to be on a, you know, we're trying to push into D2s this time around, but not everybody's on board with that, and that's okay. They don't have to go for that.
Exactly.
That's why we have a bootlegger team. That's why we have home teams. That's why we have those things. Not everybody needs to be, like, busting butt to get there all the time. It's just not something that everybody wants to do or has time for. All right. She also goes on to ask, what do you know now that no one told you when you started reffing and you would have liked to have heard?
There are skaters that will say some very mean things to you. And they might not mean it afterwards, but they probably mean it in the heat of the moment.
They have a monster that lives in their mouth.
Yes. That's a big one.
Does it hurt your feelings?
No. Well, for an instant, I kind of cry on the inside, then I'm like, watch it.
To be fair, those are probably the same skaters that say crappy things to their teammates.
Oh, yes. No,
in the heat of the moment.
I
get over that quickly because I've seen some people that I love on the track, and they're jerks. I mean, it's adrenaline. It's a sport.
Yep, absolutely.
If something goes the wrong way, I played a game, and I kind of got fired up at the refs once, so yep. I get it.
I have to say, sometimes I watch refs play, the last Murda Champs, and I watched a ref just like, at one of the refs, and I was like,
oh, really?
Really? If I had started mouthing off like you're doing to these guys, I'd be in the box, you know?
Yep.
So I just think it's funny when a ref gets pissed. It's like...
It's adrenaline. Yep. It's definitely adrenaline.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. And you have to learn to... You know, I think the worst I do is maybe go, really? To a ref and skate away like...
And everything's more serious than you think it is.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. What are the hardest penalties to catch?
The ones you don't see?
I think this varies for refs. Because going back to how do you see everything,
mm-hmm.
So when you get into narrow focus, you're watching hips, arms, and feet, and now you just lost head.
Yes.
So now you're missing high blocks and blocking with a head. And
then I feel like that's coming more and more into play with concussions.
Yeah, but the thing is, too, that going with that, you see a skater react, and then what really happened, and we get this all the time where... You'll have one team calling in, okay, they're leading with their head.
Mm-hmm.
You need to start calling blocking with head. And there's like, our jammers are coming in and they're getting hit in the head. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, so we have to be watching that. And we'll see people's reaction to a hit. Like, okay, yeah, you hurt your head, but that's because you initiated with your head.
With your head, yeah.
So it's tough. There's a lot to watch. So it's and but then you'll have some people that are calling high block after high block after high block. And then I'm thinking, okay, so now you're missing the cuts and you're missing the low blocks.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So.
And do you think refs get stuck on a call? Like,
yeah.
If they're newer?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, they're like, I know what this call is, I can see it, and I'm going to call it. You know, like.
But that's also from training, too, mm-hmm. that, okay, so we're going to put you on the outside for your first game,
mm-hmm.
so I need you to watch for multiplayer blocks and elbows, because those are the easiest things to call, and then mm-hmm. they get really focused in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're going to bring in cutting, and now they're going to be really focused on cutting. Okay,
right.
Now we're going to bring this in, and then... As they build on, it just becomes.
It's funny because it's the same way we teach skating. Like
yeah.
You'll teach somebody, we're gonna do just defense, and then they're really good at that. And then oh, we're gonna put offense in, and they're like, hey, all right, offense.
Oh,
that's
God.
All I'm gonna do. You know, you're like, no, wait, you gotta do both.
Yep,
you gotta do both.
Okay, I'm gonna take a step back.
Yeah. All right. How do you decide when you're going to eject a skater? I'm hoping that isn't a one decision.
No,
situation.
It's,
oh, no, absolutely
it's
not.
Yeah. When the rules tell us. That's
right.
The easiest way. I'm going to get into a specific one, but sometimes it's tough because when you're just looking for the egregious, I'm looking for something that's extremely not derby and something that put people at risk, whether actual risk or possible risk.
Right.
Whether this low-level skater comes out of the box and tries to block this extremely high-level skater and completely out of play. Okay, well, that impact, there's no danger there.
Right, that just was sad.
But that was an egregious, not derby,
right.
And in theory, that could have been... So
yeah.
That's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's following the rules. There's...
So, like, maybe consistent reckless play would be...
Consistent reckless play, but
yeah.
It's... You know, I have a hard time... if somebody does an apex jump and they fail... And they take somebody out, I have a hard time going immediately thinking, I'm going to expel that skater because
right.
That action is derby.
Right.
And they fell and they took somebody out. Now, if they do it a second time,
right.
Now it's not, they're being negligent. They don't know their own skill level. They don't know
right.
The track. They don't know something. And they're putting people at risk.
Right.
Yeah. But going to the rules, it's, and I think that has a follow-up question I'm probably going to bleed into a little bit, but... There's a skater who I had eject from State Wars, and I like the skater. I don't know skaters. I can tell you right now. In general, I don't know skaters. I don't know this skater from the other, but I know he's the star of that team, and I had good interactions whenever I interact with him. And I'm jam-reffing for him, and I'm watching, and I see him come in the middle, and he, he makes forcible contact. Mm-hmm. To a skater, that's brushing. This contact from one as a skater, that's brushing.
Right.
To an NSO, it's forcible contact. And you got to think that forcible contact, as hard as he hit this NSO.
He hit an NSO.
Okay. And,
in the middle.
You got to think that same contact, you want that going to your head? Think about that. That's forceful. It's not a brush at that point.
Right.
As soon as I see it happen, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to have to expel the skater. And I like the skater. And he's a star of the player. But emotion goes out of the way. He hit an NSO. It's forcible. The rule states we have to, and so we are going to take care of it.
Oh, yeah.
And we're tied whenever it happens. And people can get upset about when we do or we don't expel skaters. And I think what it comes down to is we try to uphold the rules as much as we can. And if a similar action happens and it doesn't get called, I'm going to say that maybe that ref wasn't comfortable making that call.
Right. Because mm-hmm. it's a risk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had a long time ago, I'm going to tell you a little bedtime story. Okay. In 2009, we had a team that came down from the north. I'm not going to say who. And we had a skater, who's a very good skater, come out going to the penalty box. Our coach was an injured skater at the time, was coaching, was not standing in the, like, you know, the ref lane or anything. Came out towards the penalty box, hit our coach. She was not geared up. Hit our coach on the way to the, on purpose.
Oh, my God.
On the way to the penalty box. Now, this is 2009. You know, we're still a little bit wild, wild west when we came to Derby.
Yep.
And, yes, they expelled her.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they banned her from our playing at place and you know.
Mm-hmm.
And people were outraged on both sides because they thought, yes, of course she should have been expelled. And the other side was, well, she didn't really mean it. You know, it was a really funny thing because when you said hitting an NSO, and he probably didn't mean to.
No.
Oh, absolutely.
No.
But you can't, you know, there are people that are not geared up and not in protective gear.
Yep.
You have to be very careful, you know.
And a long time phrase. I think it's dying now, but... refs can't judge intent, and when and many of the expulsion penalties, I don't care about the intent.
Right.
I care about did you put somebody at risk?
Right.
And that's what it is.
I gotcha. I hear you. All right. What was the worst experience you ever had reffing? This is
for I've had many.
Lots of them.
I've had many.
Name one that was.
But the most
bad.
Recent one is following up with this. It's like because I like the skater and is going to try to reach out and catch him at the remainder of this tournament to talk about him what happened. Like because I'm sure they didn't like the call that we had expel him. And then I go to this person's Facebook page hoping to find him at the event, and then I see them complaining about it. And I read all the comments about it. And like it just breaks my heart that there's all these people that are completely understand what happened and why the penalty was called.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then they're making up their own things that, oh, we're playing, the refs were biased. And like, I don't care who wins or loses.
Ew.
I care that one score is higher than the other.
Right.
I literally don't care who wins
or loses. That was heartbreaking to see all these comments and all these accusations and everything else and not understanding the rules. And the one person who's explaining the rule,
mm-hmm.
his voice was getting lost in
of
all
course,
this.
Of course.
And even this person who saw the rule knew the rule didn't even see it, so it couldn't even get context. So.
Well, and I've also, when I find those arguments online, usually I'm like, don't put this online.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it's a fallacy. It happens a lot with roller derby photos. So a team is unhappy and they see a photo and it's a moment in time. And that's what
screenshot,
I always tell people.
That's all it is.
It's a moment in time. It's from an angle that the ref wasn't looking at probably. Mm-hmm. It's from a different, like it's a second. You don't know what's going on. I've seen photos of myself where I was like, I don't even remember skating next to that person. Mm-hmm. But it's the way the camera angle was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, just, you got to let it go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to let it go. And people are like, no, 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 the refs are clearly biased. And I'm like, that's not a bias. That really is just a moment in time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you've got to let it go. And that's when I see something on, you know, like I see photos of stuff and I'm like, it's a moment in time. Even if I did something well, it's still just a moment of that game.
So you did great in one moment.
Yeah. Woo! You know, I'm like, wow, I'm really proud of this photo, but it's still just a moment in time. You have to let those things sit where they are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So don't take those arguments to Facebook.
Yeah.
That's why we have a private group for our Carolina Roller Girls mm-hmm. that they can complain about that stuff if they need to. Mm-hmm. That's where you can vent, but don't vent on Facebook. I've been seeing a lot of venting lately, you know, league against league, player against player. And I'm tired of looking at it because we are a group of people that need to work together. You know, you are going to play these people at some point. You may need them at some point.
Right. Well, that goes, I'm going to answer Pika, but more generally for her for this question. It's if we travel 1 hour or more to your game, treat us with respect. I do not want to be yelled at for 60 minutes. I don't want to be have driven 2.5 hours to your game. That does nothing for me because it's not regulation. It's not sanctioned. I took time out of my evening to come to your game. We don't want to be yelled at for an hour. So that whenever I experience that, that goes in that checklist of this was one of the worst games I've had to ref.
Well, and it also makes you not want to go back, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And that's the same way. Like if we have a problem with a team, like they're rude or whatever, or there's something, you know, there's a point where you're like, why did I come?
And going back to an ongoing issue with leagues that they don't have enough refs. So now for your league to function, you need to bring in 5 to 7 refs for your game. And you're treating 3 to 4 of them terribly. Well, they're not going to come back to your next game, so now you have to find 3 to 4 people to replace them.
Well, and not only that, but word gets around. If a league is particularly crappy to even one official, I mean, word of mouth in derby community is wildfire.
Yeah.
You know, the minute one person is like, so I
And I'm sure y'all have a ref group that you can talk about all this stuff in. I mean, that makes sense to me. I don't know. I would. If I were a ref,
I would message, text, etc.
Well, that's
I usually.
You talk behind our back, we talk behind your back.
Yep.
We generally don't talk about you guys unless we show up someplace and there's someone there. And then we're like, either it's like, yes, or So, yeah, we generally don't.
I've definitely gotten the, oh my God, Pika, we're so glad you're here.
Yep. Either it's seriously, it's a yes, or God, no.
Not that one.
All right. Excuse me. Okay, we got that one. How do you deal with disagreements between refs on calls? Like, at a game, I'm guessing.
Depends on the situation. I mean, like, if it's an official review, and it's one word against...
I'm gonna broaden, because I don't wait for an official review. If I see something that's different... I'm going to talk to him about it myself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So it's just broader than official review, but that's most common is I saw this, I saw that. It comes down to confidence. If there's one person's more confident than another, then that tells us that, okay, we're going to go with that one. It depends on positioning. It depends on who made the call. If two people are equally confident and they're equally in good position, then it's usually jam ref gets the vote.
Kind of hierarchy.
Okay, so there is a hierarchy, and
there can be
sort of.
It depends on what it's going on, but it's if two people are adamant, make a call, ref.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what it comes down to, and I mean, obviously, it comes down to a very serious disagreement. Head ref is kind of default.
Yeah.
Decision.
I would think the head ref would maybe come in and be like, all right, this is what we're going to go with.
Right.
Yeah, and it being that head ref where you have one person who's somewhat confident, someone who is confident but not in the right position, then you just got to make a call. You can't just sit around forever.
Yep. So there's a lot of sweat involved with being a head ref.
Oh, so much so. It's awful.
I don't know why anyone does it, and then I sign up for it all the time.
I was going to say, and then you sign up
and
for
it. Tournament head refing too, much less.
Oh, yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
And what really happens when you have to decide if you will overturn a decision? So,
again, going the same way. I will call up a ref between jams, and I'm a chatty ref too. I'll ask them what they saw.
Mm-hmm. Do you make him get on one knee? Have you seen that? Where
when you're talking to a captain?
Yeah. Do you ever do that? Because I thought that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
I do have a spiel. Okay. And when it comes to an official review, I like to have everyone stand around because I don't like to play telephone. And the reason that one of the reasons why we don't have all officials to come to the captain's meeting is because we don't want to be intimidating to the captains and coaches. And I feel like I'm bringing all those officials there because you girls intimidate me.
Yep.
I'm kidding. But most people I've interacted with, they don't mind having everyone there.
No, I don't care.
And then my follow-up.
I just thought it was funny because we were at Battle of the All-Stars, and there was one head ref that would make everybody, like, all the other refs be on one knee. And I was like, what are we doing?
If my head ref is listening, I'm not picking on you. But my spiel is, and everyone's going to stand because we are adults.
Yeah. I thought it was the weirdest thing ever. I was like,
like, if we go into a meeting, I'll take a knee because I want to take my helmet off. And I don't care what they do.
That's different, yeah.
But yeah, if I'm talking to a captain, we're all standing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get that, wanting to take your helmet off, because it does get hot in a lot of the venues. Yeah, I thought that was really weird. I was like, that's the first time I've ever seen it.
It's that intimidation thing, but yeah. All the captains and coaches I've met in roller derby are very confident, and they're not intimidated easily.
No, I don't. I don't.
I was going to say, all I don't think about it. Scare them.
I mean, you guys aren't there to just be scary. You're there to keep us safe, yeah. So I don't ever feel like you're being jerks. I mean, if someone was being aggressively jerky, I'd be like, what the hell, you know?
I don't know. I have apparently a pretty good scary reffing face, so.
You have a bitchy reffing face.
I'm good at it.
That's awesome. All right, Ellen Ulrich, who's another one of our super fans, asks, what role in derby is the hardest to get committed people for? So fans, volunteers, skaters, NSOs, refs, etc.
All of the above.
All of them. Yeah, yeah. I say
it's
all of them.
Really all of them.
It's I would say all, but I think it's fans. I mean, especially as I watch high-level derby and I'm seeing the crowd get less and less, except other than other skaters and officials, mm-hmm. or a home league, my old home league, their numbers were dwindling for a little while because as a skater moves, a turn retires, and their fan base is gone. And
right.
It's and when it comes down to it, we can say we can't have a game without skaters or NSOs or whatever, but fans, they need to buy the tickets, you know, so yeah,
it's hard. You have to grow and train fans just almost as much as you have to train
and
skaters.
Then fans, that's where you get your NSOs and skaters and refs from, so.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Maya Elisa asks, okay, blah, blah, blah. Oh, when can points no longer be scored by a jammer? Is it after they call it off, or is it after the first whistle? Is it after the last whistle? What is the whistle?
This is a very good question because I don't know what goes through jammer brain, but...
there is such a thing as jammer brain, I will say that.
But it is the fourth whistle, the first fourth whistle, because there's going to be a total of 12. So I've seen jammers... Okay, so four whistles go off, and I see that jammer... bolt after the fourth whistle. It's like there's no more. There's nothing else is happening. So it's a fourth whistle. So
probably because her coach at one point was screaming at her not to stop skating until after all the whistles are done or something.
It could be something like that. So the fourth whistle.
Right. So the fourth of the first four whistles.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's when. So if you're gonna do something spectacular, do it then.
Yeah. So if you see a jammer tapping their hips or about to tap their hips, that's when you make your move.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting stuff. All right, now I got this off of Roller Derby Pet Peeves, and I thought it was hilarious. And apropos. I wish more skaters understood how much it takes to become a ref. Myself and others have been told by people we look up to, you're giving up on being a skater, or you are a quitter and weak. When a fresh meet comes to the decision, it is maybe for a few reasons. Encouragement is needed, not putting the person down. Zebras and NSOs are hard to find and often only thought about when there are too few for a game. Now, you, Pika, started out as a skater, correct? Or were thinking about a skater. Maybe
for a while.
You thought about it.
Yeah, I thought about it.
And what changed your mind?
Girls are crazy. It was a very, very good league to start with. I really love those ladies. You know, there was no... I never felt any target from any, you know, bad behaviors that were happening. But, I don't know. I really like reffing. I liked skating with the girls, but just enjoyed reffing more.
Yeah, I think it takes a certain kind of crazy to play roller derby. Because it's dangerous. I mean, it's super dangerous. We don't mince words. It's crazy. And I got to tell you, the first time I was going to go into a scrimmage... after being fresh meat, you know, they train you to fall.
Oh, it's
and
so scary.
It is. And I was like, I don't know if I want to get hit. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I want to get hit. I don't know if I want to hit people.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm really into this. Because, I mean, I'm an aggressive person, but I'm not like, I'm not going to punch somebody in the face and stuff like
terrible
that.
Terrible at hitting.
And
I'm really bad.
They need to give people space. Because I played a game, and I think playing roller derby is one of the most fun things you do. But my passion just happens to be reffing.
Mm-hmm.
If I had time for a hobby, I'd totally play.
Would?
I don't have time or money for a hobby because between work and derby, there's just reffing
nothing
derby.
Else, right?
There's nothing else. But it's just passion. You know, some people like to read and some people like math and some people like movies or whatever. And it's just the difference. And I kind of wish people, everyone's talking about female officiating and
you know, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm. If that's the attitude that a female official is getting,
mm-hmm.
we need to back off because some people some people are Coke, some people are Pepsi. Give them,
well,
you know.
We've had this discussion in our league about female coaches, right?
Mm.
We would love to have some female coaches. But it takes a lot to get someone to coach. It's a lot of commitment. I mean, we have an amazing coach right now, and we're training up some others. Mm-hmm. But when we get a female who can skate and understands the game, she generally wants to skate and play derby.
Right.
So she doesn't want to coach. And by the time maybe she's done with derby, she maybe just is like, I'm done with derby. You know, like, I'm tired. It took a lot of my life. I'm really, mm-hmm. I like the glory. I had fun. And now I'm going to go and do something else, you know?
Yeah.
So I do get it. You know, there's this idea that, you know, if you can skate and you're female and you're in a female, and you're a female league, you're playing derby. You know,
because there's no shortage of female NSOs. So, you know, there is the type of people out there that want to officiate.
Right.
And there's no shortage of female who want to skate. So there has to be some sort of cross section of that. And I just feel that that's underpopulated. So I don't know what it is. Is it the moment that a female that likes to roller derby puts on a pair of skates? And I think Pika has told me that every time they go to practice, like, are you going to try out? Are you going to try out? And if, at some point it gets very draining, I'm going to guess.
Oh, I just asked once just if she was interested.
Oh, yeah. Because
I know you were reffing for the men's league for a while, and mm-hmm. I didn't know what your situation was. But
yeah.
I love that you're a ref. I think we need more female refs. I mean, I see, you know,
when you look at female roller derby, yeah, that's one aspect that I think is lacking. Because we have female NSOs and female skaters, and I couldn't tell you about announcers.
We're getting more female announcers that are being put on the, and I think that's been a real drive.
Two announcers I can think of are Double H and Val Capone.
Oh yeah,
so they're
exactly.
female. So
oh,
you know,
and, right? Sleazer now too.
Yeah. So
a lot of our a lot of our announcers now are female, and I think they've been really working on that with the. I don't know if it's AFTDA anymore or whatever the announcing group is, but they've been working on it.
Like
so like Kim Deal with it's been in charge of doing that. And so she's been pushing for a lot of female announcers, and I think they've had great pairings. So, I mean, I think anyone can do any of the jobs.
Absolutely.
And you know, back in the day, I think a lot of the refs got started because, you know, they were boyfriends
or
husbands or brothers or cousins.
They got roped into it.
Yeah. And they couldn't play. So,
yep. They wanted to be involved with their significant other.
And that kinda, I think that's a good thing that with men's derby, that's giving men an opportunity to take part, because now then you're getting the people that want to ref are reffing.
Right.
You know, and I had back home, there was a men's league. So like every time, well, the men's league was paired up with the female league. So every time a man came to a derby practice like that wanted to ref, they got recruited for the men's team. So I can see
so
it going both ways.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see that more with the more men's leagues out there.
And I think we just need the people that want to ref, let them ref, because I'm very, very passionate about it. And that's true for anybody. So
I agree. I think that it's, you know, follow your bliss. Mm-hmm. Nobody's getting paid.
Yeah,
so you
exactly.
should do what you really like.
Right.
And I don't look at female refs and go, well, she just can't play roller derby. Because that, I mean, you know what? There are a lot of people that can't play roller derby. This is a really, and shouldn't, and don't want to.
Exactly.
And it's a really intense.
Shout out to Ninja. She's a skater for Arch Rival.
Mm-hmm.
She is a skater for a top 10 team.
Mm-hmm.
And she's choosing to give that up to go ref because that's her current passion. I think that's mm-hmm. awesome.
Yeah, I think you should follow your bliss, man. We don't have a lot of life on this planet, so just enjoy it.
Oh, exactly.
You know?
Well, and then at the same time, exactly with the volunteering thing, like, being involved in roller derby is not always amazing. You know, it's not always awesome. It's not always happy. It's not always fantastic. So if you're doing something that you're enjoying doing, you're more likely to keep doing it through the hardness.
And what's the old rule? One of the, you hear it all the time, rule number one, don't be a douchebag. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we need to treat each other better in our leagues and from league to league. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if you're a skater, ref, NSO, announcer, fan. We just got to be treating each other better.
Right.
And I think as the community, we're getting there, but there's always room for improvement.
Well, and I think it started out, and honestly, the relationship between skater and ref, there were a lot of, like, because they were boyfriends or not trained well, you know,
there's two schools of thought. There's either they're boyfriends, so that's one thing, or I come from the area where we're Team No Fun, so there's this divide between officials and skaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a while, though, like, there was an abusive relationship with the skaters towards the refs, and then it's flipped. Now it's like, don't want to piss off the refs, and now it's starting to balance. It's starting to balance out. But I mean, there were good, you know, 2009. I remember seeing skaters just like no, arguing, you know, calls on the track, not going to the box, arguing calls, and then the ref just going, all right, whatever, you know, because they were just like, I'm not putting up with this. And now, you know, you see people, you know, insubordination and all that, and I think we're starting to balance it out a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I think it's a nice feeling that it's balanced out.
We put our skates on one get a time.
So. We all have to skate on 8 wheels, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Next question. Okay. Which basic skating skills do you find most critical to be a successful referee?
Lateral movements.
Lateral movements, huh?
Mm-hmm.
How come?
Because if you can't move and someone's coming at you quickly, something bad could potentially happen. Also, stopping and starting. That
stopping's
was a really, really big one.
I was going to say acceleration.
Yeah.
Because skaters go from zero to derby very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to keep up, especially if you're on the outside because you have farther to go.
Well, right. Yeah, and officials generally are expected to be faster than the skaters anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not arguing.
No, I mean, there's the test, right? You guys actually have to do it faster than the average skater does.
So me, who's only been skating for 5 or 6 years, and I'm going to be jam roughing for nationally ranked speed skaters, I don't care if I can take a shortcut. Taking shortcuts is not going to be enough.
Nope.
I need speed, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, there's definitely been some jammers that I've tried to follow and just, you know, scrimmage has been like, all right, you know what, I give up, I'm done. I cannot keep up with the skater, even on the inside.
I thought it was an okay jam ref. I had okay speed being in there, and then I was at a Team USA men's tryout and trying to keep up with those jammers. I don't care how much speed I thought I had or how much of the track I can cut. Those guys were fast.
Well, and you are also at a disadvantage. I mean, I'm a speed skater, and so you're at a disadvantage with the fact that you can't turn the way they can. You know, their turning radius is better for what they're doing, and you guys are kind of stuck with that. And then you have people to get around sometimes, or there's something in the way. Someone left a water bottle and it rolled. You've really got some
all of the awareness.
Problems there. Yeah. So you're saying like stop and go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, definitely. Stop and go, stop and go. We tell our skaters the same thing.
Yep.
And do you ever find yourself in a situation where you have to dodge hits?
All the time.
Okay.
I think my favorite is I was jam reffing and the jammer got knocked out into me and literally punched me in the vagina.
Yeah.
Nice.
I've gotten to the point where if I see a skater coming, like if they're upright, if they're coming at me, I used to try to dodge, but now I just like, I brace for it. And most of the time the skater avoids me.
Yeah, we don't try. We don't want to ever hit a ref.
If they're going to hit me, I'm going to take the hit. And, there's a few skaters that have hit me and they've gone down. It's like, yeah. You play the sport. Come on.
They probably weren't expecting, or they were like, oh, crap. I'm very careful, especially if I'm going to the box and there's an outside pack ref. I'm always very careful of that outside pack ref.
Uh-huh. I've been taken out. I'm coming back. They're coming on. It happens. So.
I was going to say, I've gotten taken out, especially for whatever reason, OPRing. I don't know what it is, but I have just taken out so many times as an OPR, and usually it's completely, you know, skaters out of control falling and just
just be fair, you know, the outside hit that is probably the most like brutal
hit. Well, you teach your skaters, okay, you gotta get them out of the corner because their momentum's gonna be there and you can drive them out
and
like
pulled out and that's why I like hitting to the inside because nobody expects it. You're like, yeah, please jump. Please jump. All right. Are there any rules that you think need to be tweaked or modified based on how you see the game being played? And I mean, this isn't like we're expecting you to, you know, turn in your WFCDA stripes and your Murda stripes right now. But I mean, if you could change a rule and tweak it.
I don't know. I'm still kind of riding on the joy of the 3-second forearm being removed. I'm good.
I've been very happy with the evolving.
I do enjoy how
making some things easier to call. And safety. There's been a lot of changes. And I think what the skaters have been doing has been great as a whole.
We're trying. I mean, and I think we need to make it safe because, you know, you want people to stay in. It really takes about 3 years to grow a decent skater. Like, I mean, some skaters get it right away. They're, like, amazingly talented, but they don't necessarily get the game right away.
Right.
You know, they're amazingly talented skaters, but they're jammers because they don't want to work in a wall, you know, because that's a little bit harder.
Yeah.
Not harder physically, different.
Right.
The right rules are going to be made, even if they're reluctant. The one I look at is the blocking to the head. There was that I think that should have came up sooner, but I think people were reluctant to make the change about the secondary contact to a head. They were reluctant to make that change, but eventually they made the, you know, smoother heads or whatever came came together and they made the rule of what it needs to be. Well, getting 30-second penalties, I think that's a great
thing. Oh, I love the 30-second penalty. Man, I love that. Because, I mean, I remember sitting there and a minute really was just like, oh, might as well just camp out here.
Take forever.
Stopped for Derby. And, you know, fans did not like stop Derby.
Not at all. And it, I mean, that is the one complaint that I hear a lot. And when I hear people that have come back after a couple of years, they're like, oh, okay, it's not as bad as it was. Right. It's still kind of bad. They still don't love it, but they're, you know. And I think that 30-second one is amazing. It's so much better because it also makes you have to do offense.
Yeah.
Because, oh, thank God, you know.
Exactly.
I'm super proud of that.
But also the game's evolving, too. So you're doing stop derby, but you're faking stop derby and you're going to hit somebody. You're going to fake hitting somebody, but you're doing stop derby. Yeah. So it's the game's evolving to accommodate the rules, too.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I have this bronchitis, so it's been really fun. And I really appreciate y'all, like, peering through my coughing fit. We did not get through all our questions.
No.
And that's okay. I'll have a group answer those next week. And I tried to make sure we hit most of the ref questions. This episode is brought to you by Double Deuce Tattoo and Art Gallery. If you're interested in tattoos, piercing, or local artist artwork, you should check out Double Deuce. They are located in Northwoods Shopping Center off of Harrison Avenue in Cary, North Carolina. They have friendly and experienced staff, state-inspected and approved sterility equipment, and even art created by local artists for sale. Not to mention 100% of all sales goes to the local artist. Swing by or even send them a consultation request online. Check out their website by visiting doubledeucetattoo.com or Google Double Deuce Tattoo. Double Deuce Tattoo and Art Gallery. They're just like any other tattoo shop, only better. And what are you guys, like, what are your plans for the next month or so? Do you have anything you're going to be traveling to? Or?
Next month is dead.
That's good, right?
No.
No, we want
to
skate.
You have to realize that from April to State Warriors, the middle of December, every weekend was literally derby.
We had 3 weekends off in that
Just a handful. So it's I'm going a little stir crazy. But tournament season's coming soon. I've been accepted a couple things. So I'm getting excited, but the ones that and they're not public yet. So what I will say is I'm looking forward to Classic City Crush. Hopefully I'm not stepping on toes because it's not public yet. But Classic City Crush, I get a THR for.
Nice.
I get to THR for Bruja with some of the best people in the world: Laddie, Werner, Brawls, and Silicon Tofu. So I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to finish the year THRing for River Valley Ride in Ohio. So officials, get your applications in.
Yeah.
Can they email you? Do you want to send them an email?
Polydangerous at Carolina Roller Girls. No dots. P-O-L-E dangerous at gmail.com, I think. I don't use that one very often, but you'll find me.
Okay. And what are you, any plans that you've got going on?
I pretty much do everything he does. we travel together.
Well, Team North Carolina's going to be playing Battle of the All-Stars up in Philly if you want to come.
Yeah,
so there's not enough money or vacation for all the derby that we want to do. I'll say that
exactly.
Much right now.
If you could make a career out of traveling and officiating derby, we would. But unfortunately, only the top tier level refs do that.
Yeah, right? I know.
Getting there.
Well, you wasted another hour on Q's Tips. Thanks for listening, and I hope you tune in next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.